During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Get on.
Is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
This is my road tripping song. This is a good driving song. Singing a bunch of different city names. And I played over and over again to my wife and daughter to tell me to stop playing the same effing song over and over again. Okay, who's driving? Whoever's driving picks the song. Crank it up, Marco. Get me all fired up. I'm going to drive home. I can't leave yet, though. We got another hour of the show. We got Garrett Dieter in studio. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing outstanding. How about yourself?
You know, I'm doing real good. The rain came. It's cool off. Hopefully, we'll be done with this 100-degree weather. And I know that you're going to be someplace on Saturday. And I've emceed this event a couple of times before. Now, we'll just have to have a conversation amongst ourselves because he gets all, you know, cranky when we start talking about the SEC. And he snide, you know, it just means more, all this stuff. So, just, you know. He's mad because the Big 12 broke up, right? Just don't we have to change your tune in front of Gary Dieter. You're very anti-SEC. You don't like it. You don't like realignment. You don't want that conference in your backyard. You don't want the government in your bedroom. You don't want any of these things. So that's I want to be you in front of Gary Dieter.
If one school in the SEC does everything, then we all get to take credit for it. We all want a national
championship. Badmouth the SEC to this SEC athlete right here. But it's going to be the SEC block party, and it's an annual event where Kansas City-based area alumni and fans representing the SEC schools get together and party to try to kick off the football season. The Tiger Club of KC and the Kansas City-Mizzou alumni chapter kick it off. All the teams will be represented. Alumni from SEC schools will have their own spots where you can go in there and find out where you can get together and watch the games or whatever else. It's going to be a silent auction with all kinds of great stuff. And am I allowed to say this? I'm going to say it. I will not ask for permission, but I will seek forgiveness later. Free beer while supplies last, provided by the Tiger Club of Kansas City and the Kansas City Mizzou Alumni Chapter, Saturday at 3 o'clock in the North Kansas City location of Chicken and Pickle. That's a great spot. And so you're going to be there representing Alabama, aren't you?
I will be there Saturday, North Kansas City, Chicken and Pickle, 3 to 6, SEC block party. I'm going to represent the Tide. We should have a good showing. I've been talking to some alumni from Alabama, and that's what's kind of cool about the event is I've been here for 5 years, and I didn't know that a Kansas City alumni for Alabama existed.
So there is one. There's a group.
It's an actual group, so right. I'm excited to meet some of those people and just meet all the other SEC fans because, I mean, it means a little bit more.
It does. He knows it. He knows that. See, that's right.
No doubt.
And so, I'll ask you this. So when Georgia won the national championship, you're like, all right, Georgia, all right, SEC, or you're like, screw you, Georgia. I don't care. I don't want you to win.
So I would say I'm like a fake SEC guy because I was only there for like 6 months.
Right. But long enough.
I would say I'm a Bama or die type of guy. I'm not the SEC all the way, but
that's right.
I do enjoy watching Bama win and dominate. But okay. Yeah, I would say I'm a fake SEC.
But you'll be there representing Alabama, and you're going to be there. It's a great place to go, Chicken and Pickle. You'll have fun. And, Nate, you're invited down there if you want to rub elbows with some SEC talent.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that.
Yeah, free beer. I mean, that'll get you there.
I'd never turn down an opportunity to go to Chicken and Pickle.
That's
I was just
exactly
there this
right.
past weekend. So.
That's right. And so I asked you last week if you could possibly give us some type of Nick Saban story because you played at Alabama. You've been around the man. We've always looked upon Nick Saban as, because it's of the media, he's kind of a grumpy guy with no sense of humor. And then a couple of his former players decided to let the world know that Nick Saban's a fan of D's nuts jokes and things like that. And so then we really started to take a liking to Nick Saban.
Yeah.
And so what was Nick Saban like when you were there? I know that he focuses a lot on defense, mm-hmm. but... So how would you describe Nick Saban based on your perspective?
I would say my biggest story that I remember from being there was my first game. We played USC, and I scored a touchdown kind of close to the end of the game. And my family was sitting in, like, the second – it was at Cowboys Stadium. They were sitting in, like, the second level, right in the end zone. Right in the end zone, I scored, and I pointed up to them after I scored – and got back to the sideline, like, was feeling really good.
Oh, no.
I think it was the Monday following, we have, like, the good, bad, and ugly showing in the film room, and, like, that play hit all good, bad, and ugly with Coach Saban. And he said it was a good play or whatever, and he showed me, like, pointing up on the film to my family, and obviously he didn't know that they were up there, but he told me, because he's a Toledo guy, and Toledo and Bowling Green, I went to Bowling Green, big rivalry, and he said, "This isn't Bowling Green. We don't do that shit here." And that was in front of the whole team. So that was the first team meeting that I was kind of brought up in. So it was kind of embarrassing, but at the same time, like, looking back, it's pretty funny that he would call me out for something like that. But yeah, he shows a little bit more personality than a lot of people see behind the scenes. But I'd say for the most part, he is. He's a pretty serious guy. But I'm a big Saban guy. He gets the most out of his guys.
I mean, you can't argue with the success, the unbelievable success that he's had. And I've always found it interesting where, you know, you'll see coaches that have either been let go or haven't worked out at other. They'll go back and spend some time and bounce back and get a better job that they lost. And he's really good at, I don't know what to call it, just rehabilitating coaches, but giving coaches a second chance to have success.
Yeah.
Who was the offensive coordinator when you were there? Who were some of the guys you worked with?
Yeah, I mean, I think almost every position coach from when I was there is like a head coach of a college program now. We had the OC was Lane Kiffin. We had Lane Kiffin. We had Mario Cristobal, Billy Napier, SEC, Miami.
Damn!
I always forget the defensive coaches, but
well, just all those
guys.
Right there.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like most coaches go back to Bama to – coolest thing about Saban to me is how he gets everybody to buy into, like, the culture of, like, winning. And you get all these five-star guys that have maybe an ego when they walk in the door, but it kind of gets shut down quick because those freshmen walk in and you see the juniors and the seniors, and okay, those guys were five stars a couple years ago, and now they're doing everything right and acting the right way.
Okay, so let's play. This was the Alabama player at the press conference when we first found out about behind the scenes of Nick Saban.
Yeah, I've asked a couple of the other older guys about this, but do you have a favorite saying that Saban has, one of his little coaching, quips he has?
Not that I can think of right now because he has so many, but there are a few I like, and he always talking about touch D's or you know, suck on D's or all that.
The PR guys, no, the desperation from the PR guy. No,
yeah.
Please.
He thinks about it. He's like, suck.
He's like, no. So there's that, and so then you mentioned Lane Kiffin. We played this earlier. Lane Kiffin was asked about the search for a punter at Ole Miss, and this is what he had to say.
Hey, you guys have also added a punter to your roster. Can you talk a little bit about him?
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about him. I think he was down at the frat house, you know, like at a keg party or something, you know, where they got him from. So we got some conditioning work to do with my guy, but we just said, hey, someone go find a punter around campus. And so we found one that actually used to punt in Division I. So,
and so what was
my guy?
And you talk about a guy that you either love him or hate him. Mm-hmm. It seems like people that are around him love him, But then, like, boy, does Tennessee not like him, and anywhere he's left. What was he like to play for?
He was. I mean, it was cool to kind of play for him and meet him. But I would say, like, he was never really personable. It was kind of hard. Like, I would consider him kind of an awkward guy to talk to,
really?
Have a conversation with. And I'm a big-time guy on coach-player relationship when it comes to having a relationship with that, kind of getting to know them. And Kiffin, he was just kind of a little bit awkward to me.
See, it seems like he'd be a guy that would fit right in and be like a player's coach, have a good relationship. That surprises me.
Yeah.
To say that he's kind of awkward.
Yeah, I feel like he did have that with guys that were there multiple years, and I don't know if it was just – I mean, it's kind of hard to get to know somebody in 6 months in a football season with everything that's going on. But, yeah, I'm a big-time relationship guy when it comes to player coaches. I think it just makes makes you want to play harder and play for that guy.
So what was that like? So, you know – going from, you know, Bowling Green and then going to Alabama, what was that process like? How did you end up selecting Alabama? I mean, you said you spent 1 year there after you had put up, 94 catches for over 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. So clearly you were a receiver I'm sure many schools wanted. How did you end up at Alabama?
Yeah, I was trying to follow Dino Babers, who is the coach at Syracuse. He was at Bowling Green.
Yeah.
He left, and that kind of gave me the idea of, okay, I'm graduating. I have a chance to go somewhere else to play. I had a good season. I had a big game against Tennessee the first game of the year, which kind of put my name on the map. But, yeah, Bama was – my connection there was Charlie Weiss Jr. I grew up with him, and he was an analyst there, and he kind of plugged me in, I would say.
Man,
and
you're just giving us material one right after another. So you grew up with Charlie Weiss Jr.
Yep.
Okay, and Charlie Weiss Jr. spent 1 year at my kid's high school at St. Pius, where he played 1 year. And, of course, Nate is a Kansas guy and really enjoyed the Charlie Weiss era thoroughly at KU. And so
what are you going to do?
I confess ignorance here. I know by looking at your Wikipedia page that you're from South Bend originally.
Yeah.
What's the story there? Why were you in South Bend?
That's where I'm from.
Yeah, I mean, but like, did your family, like? Well, my question, I guess, is like, did your old man work at Notre Dame or something like that?
So my dad's a retired police officer now, but at the time he would do security for Notre Dame. So he would kind of be, I mean, he would just have a relationship with basically all the coaches up until Brian Kelly. So he got to know Charlie Weiss through his time there, and Charlie liked me when I was growing up playing high school ball in South Bend. And right when he got to Kansas, he offered me, and I actually took an official visit to KU. I don't know. That was.
Oh, really?
That was 2011, I think, December 2011.
Wow. So how did that visit go? Let's go back to that visit.
It was cool. I mean, okay. I liked it. It was. I met a guy named Bryce Butler, who played receiver at USC. He was grad transferring at the time, and from that visit, like, me and him are still pretty tight friends. So,
oh, wow.
So what has how come you didn't end up in Kansas?
So I was basically committed to SMU already, and since I knew Charlie Weiss, I wanted to be a gentleman and take the visit and at least give it a chance. And I just kind of liked SMU a little bit more at the time, but I feel like I made the right decision.
Right. I think so. I think you did. Gary, I'm going to agree with you. Nate, do you concur?
My brain is like trying to – I'm trying to wrap my brain around everything that's being said
now.
This is incredible.
Do you have any idea what the Charlie Weiss era did to him? And he's starting to get a little itchy and scratchy.
I was the sideline reporter at that time for KU football. And
boy, did he love to go in there and talk to Charlie Weiss.
I will say this: Charlie was always very good to me. Actually, like, he was always very nice to me.
But the content, the topics were always, you know,
the things that happened in the program while he was there were it was not great.
What?
You know, I mean,
what are you talking about?
Well, you know, one of the stories. So you and Charlie Weiss Jr., were you guys the same age, by the way?
What are you getting ready to say? I'm excited to hear this.
We are the same age. We played, I remember playing, like, flag football against
him. Okay. Yeah. And so he, you know, when Charlie Weiss got to Kansas, Charlie Weiss Jr. then went to school there and was, like, technically, like, a student manager. You know, he But like Charlie Weiss kind of gave him coaching responsibilities, and so he would like be out there like doing wide receiver drills and like cussing out the wide receivers and stuff like that when he was a student manager. You know, like he wasn't even like a graduate assistant or anything like that.
What's the problem?
Well, some of the wide receivers had a problem with it, you know, like, so that caused issues, well, you know.
I mean, nitpicking now. Charlie Weiss Jr., when I was at Bama, he would lead some of the offensive meetings with the whole offense in there. So I thought, like, seeing that was pretty cool. A guy, I mean, at the time, 22, 23 years old, in a room full of the best players in the country, kind of leading the offense, teaching guys plays, and he's grown up to be a really good coach, and I'm excited to kind of see his growth through the years, because it will be a short time before he's a head coach at a major university.
Okay, so you mentioned Dino Babers. Mm-hmm. Our afternoon host, Seren Petro, is a Syracuse grad, and I don't know that he is totally satisfied with Dino Babers. Say something that will make him feel better about Dino Babers and getting Syracuse back to bowl eligibility or something.
To me, he was my like one of my favorite coaches because he loved receivers. So he always treated us like babies. I mean, he did everything. Everything was built around the receivers at the time. So I love Dino. I can't say anything bad about about my guy.
You hear that, Petro? Get off Dino's back. So what happened? Did anything happen to KU that said besides you just didn't want to go there? I want to hear. I feel like you're holding back something. Did you cross paths with Nate or something? Or was it just? Or did you say, you know, I just like SMU better? There was nothing you disliked about KU, or did you look at their like? Did you look at their record? Like, I don't want to go here.
No, I didn't look at like anything other than like the facility was nice. The drive up there was kind of weird. Like going from the airport, I thought it was like, man, this is kind of in the middle of nowhere. But SMU at the time, like that was my mind was set. Like,
that's nice.
I was 3 weeks away from enrolling there, so. It was kind of hard for me to just go back and switch, but
right.
Was Kevin Kane on the staff at SMU when you were there? He's an assistant at Illinois now, but he had been a KU guy, so I didn't know. I remember he was like defensive coordinator at SMU at one point.
I think that
was after you, though.
Yeah, it had to be after. We had like June. My time was June Jones.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So that June Jones was awesome.
That would have been a fun wide offense to be a part of as a wide receiver.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
What was
that like?
It was cool. It was. We had Timmy Chang as one of the GAs at the time.
Former quarterback at Hawaii.
Now head coach at Hawaii now. So, you know, you grow up kind of seeing like the Hawaii, like June Jones. If you look him up, it's going to be everything Hawaii. So seeing Timmy there, he was kind of the guy that took me under his wing and taught me the plays and stuff. So. It was kind of surreal at the time. We had a lot of good receivers that were there. Cole Beasley, Darius Johnson were two guys that were right there before me. So that's kind of what made me go there was, all right, I can see two guys having success. Why not try it here?
So to go back to when you left Bowling Green, well, you graduated from Bowling Green and you had a year left basically, did the graduate transfer thing.
Yep.
And so was Charlie Weiss Jr. part of the reason then that you got a foot in the door with Alabama? What was that process like?
I say a foot in the door, yes. I think he mentioned my name, and I think me having a good game against Tennessee the first game of the year kind of put me on the map for SEC teams because they're going to see that film. But yeah, transferring there, I wanted to go to Syracuse. I wanted to follow Dino just because it would be an easy transition over there. I left Bowling Green because the staff that they brought in was, I mean, it was all first-year coaches. It was literally a running back coach from Texas Tech and a bunch of GAs that came from there. So it would be a whole year of learning, and I just didn't want to spend my senior year kind of going through that. So it was either there, it was go to Syracuse, Wake Forest, which Dave Clawson was there. That's the reason I went to Bowling Green, or go to Alabama. And once Alabama kind of started, like, actually recruiting me, it was kind of hard to turn them down, so.
How like were they pretty aggressive? Like, what was it like being recruited by Alabama?
It was cool. I mean, it was so they had a guy named Richard Mullaney who was a white receiver, grad transfer from Oregon State the year before, and they won the national championship. So I think they were kind of like, all right, let's kind of fill this role. And that's kind of where I came in. So seeing Richard Mullaney like play well and do well in the national championship and have a good season, I was like, all right, well. Why not try to go to Alabama here and try to do exactly what he just did?
So you mentioned how, and everybody that plays at Alabama says the same thing, that When you get there, there's just a culture in place. Mm-hmm. Everybody buys in. If they don't, they're not going to last very long.
Yep.
And clearly Saban has that going. So you're all of a sudden you're a senior,
mm-hmm.
but you've never been there before.
Right.
And there's other guys that have been in the program 4 or 5 years. Yep. How hard was it to fit in and to pick up all the culture stuff when you make a move like that?
For me, it wasn't too bad. Like, I've always been a guy of like a good culture. I mean, I work hard, do things the right way, listen, and just follow the rules for the most part. So for me, kind of going in there, I feel like that's another reason why I got brought in, was I was a guy that they could trust to kind of lead by example. And I get there, and it is a culture shock. You get there, and you're playing against the best players in the country on a daily basis. You're competing against them. They're 10 times more athletic than me, stronger, faster, everything. So I don't know. Going there was definitely a culture shock, but I would consider that like that'd be like going to the minor leagues of baseball before you go to the MLB. So for me, I think it benefited me learning how to play special teams, learning how to kind of do the stuff that kept me around the Chiefs for a while, playing multiple positions. It was definitely a culture shock, but at the same time, that's something that I needed, I guess.
Saban was the head coach, Lane Kiffin, offensive coordinator, and then analyst, and also helped with the offense, Steve Sarkisian. Defensive coordinator was Jeremy Pruitt.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mario Cristobal, like you said, was the offensive line coach. Billy Napier, wide receivers. Napier's the head coach of Florida. Cristobal's the head coach of Miami. Pruitt became the head coach of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Lane Kiffin's the head coach of Ole Miss. Good God.
Yep.
Right? And then, like, look at the corners. You're going up against Minkah Fitzpatrick and Marlon Humphrey in practice. I mean, it's un-freaking believable. And you go through that, and you go through Alabama. And, I mean, did you know, with Mario Cristobal and Billy Napier,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you could tell, like, those guys were.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, they had their, I mean, everybody knew what type of guys they were, what type of coaches they were. They were always. Like, they could take control of the room as soon as they start talking. So when you see that in a coach, like, you know that they could be a head coach at some point. But yeah, that defense that we played, we had a rough time. Like, Jalen Hurts was his true freshman year, and I mean, you had Reuben Foster, John Allen, Darren Payne. You just had a bunch of just dogs on defense that we were literally going against every single day. And I mean, we did not have very much success. I mean, they just dominated us on a daily basis.
That's wild. We have Garrick Dieter in studio back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We've got Garrick Dieter in studio. And don't forget, if you are a college football fan or an SEC football fan, Mizzou fan, Gary's going to be representing Alabama at the SEC Block Party coming up on Saturday at 3 o'clock at Chicken and Pickle in North Kansas City. There'll be a silent auction. There's going to be free beer while supplies last, provided by the Tiger Club of Kansas City and the Kansas City Mizzou Alumni Chapter. And all teams will be represented. And so, and you have found your Alabama alumni group here in Kansas City. So they'll be there as well, and you'll be there talking SEC football with people, right?
I'm excited to get there. It's gonna be fun to meet a lot of the SEC fans that are in Kansas City, get a relationship built with them, and there will be a lot of good connections that come out of that.
And there'll be a lot of fun to be had, as always, at Chicken and Pickle. Okay, so. The Chiefs played at Chicago on Saturday. NFLPA complained about the field. Andy Reid wasn't very happy about the field, thankfully, except for Blake Bell with his hip injury. But they said that was non-contact. Who knows if the field affected that or not? It happened on his touchdown catch. But what did that field look like to you? And as a player, how difficult is that when you know you got to play on a surface that is not up to the standards of an NFL field?
Yeah, we played there. I remember playing there in the preseason. I think that was 3 years ago. And as soon as you walk on the field, the grass is a lot thicker. It's a lot longer. And it's like you're so used to practicing on a perfectly manicured field. Like, the Chiefs do an awesome job with their practice fields, making them like game fields. And You just get there and it's I mean consider it like a nice high school field. It's something that pros shouldn't have to play on. And having concerts and soccer games, like right. soccer players are always kind of tearing up fields
right.
when it comes down to it. So
that's exactly right. I mean, he nailed it.
It's almost like you told him to say that while I was in the restroom.
What are you talking about? He's a football player that has had to deal with these conditions because of soccer players like you tearing up the field.
I know.
He knows. He was laughing because he started laughing. You know?
It's definitely all these little 150-pound soccer players jogging around on it that tears up the field.
Rolling
it's definitely
around,
not
rolling
that.
Around in pain. And,
yeah,
and,
faking
you know,
injuries out there. That tears up the field.
No, I think there needs to be some type of rules with the NFL with having concerts and other sporting right. events because
there was an Elton John concert a week before and that did tear up the grass.
Well, look at what that concert did at Kauffman Stadium's field. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean that happened. That's definitely a problem. Well, who was it? Was it Shakira that ruined the game that was supposed to be in Mexico City?
I think so. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We played there. I think the next year.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the field was still not up to par for NFL standards. So it's definitely something that they need to address. I think it's going to hurt somebody at some point. I mean, there's a couple fields in the NFL that aren't necessarily up to the par of what it needs to be. So. However they need to address that, I think, I mean, obviously they have to make money when it's not Sunday or Monday night, so they got to figure it out, but I don't know. Something's got to change with that.
Okay, so this is the last week of training camp up in St. Joe. Thankfully, it's cooling off a little bit, but it's been hot. Mm-hmm. It's been humid. So what's the mindset of the players right now? You can count on one hand how many practices are left up there and you're getting ready to wrap things up. What's going through their minds now?
I would say everybody's just ready to get out of there. You know, I think the worst part about training camp is having that first preseason game, and then you don't get to go home. You go right back up to St. Joe, and it's like, all right, you really got to lock it in for that next week because that's when the real grind starts of camp. It's like when you play that first preseason game, you get that out of the way, but, man, you have to go back to St. Joe, sleep in the dorms, still eat all the food that's on campus. Like, you're just ready to get home after that, so... you know, I would say the mindset is get through this week, try to stay as mentally sharp as you can, but and everybody's ready to get out of there.
What about when you're one of the guys that's, because I mean, I feel like you were one of these guys, you're not sure about your spot on the roster. Mm-hmm. So like, is it, does that make it almost easier to stay focused through that last week? Because you know that, you know, it's such a thin margin between whether or not you're going to be on the team.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, through my years, like, you kind of see, like, all right, if I'm with the ones, with the twos, with the threes, kind of moving around during training camp, like, you kind of have a good idea if you're making the team or not. And I would say, for the most part, like, I mean, I would always be locked in, but at the same time, like, you're ready to get home. Like, you're ready to go see your family and just be home in your own bed, just get out of St. Joe. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's your job to stay focused and be ready to compete. And you do compete, but at the same time, it's like you kind of see where you are with the roster, and that sometimes is a little bit frustrating for a lot of guys, and I was in that boat every single year.
See, it's interesting with the wide receivers because you know, MVS, mm-hmm. Hardman, Sky Moore, and Juju Smith-Schuster, they're on the roster. It seems like Justin Watson with special teams and mm-hmm. what he did on Saturday, he's there. And then it comes down to that last spot. You got Josh Gordon, you got Reese Fountain, who's a very good special teams player. And when you listen to Dave Tope speak, he'll tell you, when he talks about a guy and singles him out, say, hey, he's a four-phase guy, mm-hmm. or he's a guy I can trust, that is a clear path,
yep.
right? And so the importance, and Justin Watson even said that's one of the reasons why I picked the Chiefs, not only to play with Patrick Mahomes, but the importance that the Chiefs place on special teams, that will decide many of the final roster spots, right?
Yeah, 100%. Once you get past that fourth receiver, fifth, sixth, seventh guy, like, if you're not playing special teams, you're not making the team. So that was kind of the role that, like, I was always in. Marcus Kemp was always in. Pringle was kind of in the first couple years that he was there. Tope definitely takes a – that's Tope's thing, is those fifth and sixth receivers have to be able to kind of play 3 to 4 phases and compete at a high level when it comes to special teams. So Justin Watson is a good example of – to me, I see him kind of following exactly what Kemp did the past couple of years, is you can compete on offense. Like, you can get in there. They trust you to do what you have to do. Are you a number one receiver? No, but how many number one receivers are there out there? So for him, it's going in, competing, doing the right thing, being in the right spot, but then just being an ace on special teams. And like you said, that's something Tobe takes a lot of pride in, and I think a lot of guys respond to that.
Of the top five receivers, the only one that was on the team last year is Mecole Hardman. So whether you're a rookie or a veteran from another team, how difficult is it to pick up this offense, to learn this offense, and to get everything figured out so you're not thinking so much?
I would say it's definitely hard. Coach Reed expects the receivers, Coach Reed, EB, they expect the receivers to play multiple positions. So that's why you saw a lot of guys moving around the past 5 years. And Coach Reed's not a guy that's going to change the way he does things just because new guys come in. It's going to be the same thing. So for guys to come in, it's definitely tough, but you have a lot of leaders on the offense. You have a lot of great teachers in our coaches and the coaches of the Chiefs. So I think they'll do a great job of adjusting. But at the same time, I would say they're not going to be playing 100% speed until week four, week five. It's to me, that's you coming in, learning the offense. Like, it might be similar, but to feel 100% comfortable, I would say it's going to take like actual games to play in, to see like the speed of the game and just how Coach Reed and Pat and those guys move guys around to get people the ball.
So what is the part that's so hard then? Is it that you have to make these little reads in terms of how you're going to run the route based on the coverage and all that at the line of scrimmage? Is that the part that makes it so difficult?
No, I would say the hardest part is kind of just getting lined up and knowing who you are on offense, because there's a lot of different personnel groups and a lot of different plays, and those pieces are always moving. So and when Coach Reed starts adding in the motions and the shifts, and it's somewhat hard to keep track of that if it's your first time doing it. So to feel comfortable with it, it just takes time. I don't think there's any way around it, and I think that's what Coach Reed does a great job of. Is, I mean, you're going to get a million reps during camp, so you should feel pretty good going into the season. But to be 100% ready to go, I would say a couple games in the season to feel comfortable.
I think that the motion, the pre-snap motion, is an interesting point, because I was reading something I don't know, a while back, about what percentage of snaps in the NFL come with pre-snap motion anymore, and that if you look at the better offenses, they run motion before most snaps. Mm-hmm. And Andy Reid's at the top of the list in that, because it does a few different things. It allows you to move the defenders around. It allows you to kind of see what the coverage is beforehand. And the Chiefs seem to use motion almost just to like wear guys out on the other side too. Because if you got to chase Tyreek Hill from sideline to sideline before he even snaps the ball, you can wear him down. That's a lot to keep track of, though, huh, as a player? Like, all the different types of motions you're going to run before the snap even happens?
Yeah, I would say so. And you brought up a good point. Like, Tyreek was kind of the one doing most. It's Tyreek and Kelsey mainly doing the motions, kind of just to move them around, so you can't necessarily, like, bracket them. Or once they start moving, you're going to see kind of who is guarding them. So that would give Pat a good indicator. But it's kind of exhausting. Like, Tyreek's a freak of nature when it comes to football. And I remember being his main backup my second year in the NFL, and I remember in practice, like, I would have to do all the motions that he does in the games, like all right, D, go out there, these are all you, like. So for me, like, it's exhausting. Like, you're running back and forth, but you're running back and forth before the snap, and then you got to be full speed when the ball snaps. So
50 yards downfield, then you got to come back, huddle up, do it again.
And mentally it's exhausting, but at the same time, like, physically it's I mean, you're running before the snap, so you're going to be a little bit more tired than the guy that's just standing in one place.
So when you first heard that the Chiefs had traded him, were you, like, stunned like most people? Were you like, yeah, I kind of saw this coming. This doesn't surprise me. Like, what was your first reaction when you saw that the Chiefs had made that deal?
So I was like, Tyreek's like one of my really good friends. So I was kind of on the end, I would say. Like, I kind of had a good feeling of what was going on, and I would say, like, I was kind of the one, like, the third guy, like, the third party guy, like, talking to Tyreek, talking to Coach Reed, like, kind of not negotiating, but at the same time, like, just kind of being that middleman of conversation. I mean, you had a decent feeling something was going to happen. Tyreek wanted to get paid what he wanted to get paid. So the Chiefs could only offer so much money. And, you know, they made a decision to send him to Miami, and they got a lot back for him. So I think it's a win-win. I think Miami's going to love having Tyreek. The energy he brings, the fans he's going to put in those stands down there is going to be insane once he starts making plays. So, yeah, it's a win-win for both teams, in my opinion.
So were you like – I mean, did you enjoy being part of that process, or were you like, oh boy, I got to go tell him, tell him this, I got to tell him that, because it, you know, obviously it ended up with him getting traded. We're like, yeah. Oh geez, I'm in the middle of this thing.
I would say I somewhat enjoyed it, like kind of feeling somewhat like important, I guess, like, all right, we got to talk to this guy because he's got a great relationship with Tyreek. And I mean, I got cut at the end of the day, so I guess it didn't do me too well. But no, it was a good time. Like Tyreek's like still one of my really good friends. Still talk to him on a weekly basis. But you know, that was, like you said, like McColl's the only guy from last year's team that's still there. So to me, that was the biggest change. Was like, okay, Pringle's gone, D-Rob's gone, Kemp is gone, now Tyreek is gone. So it's like, I was in that room during the summer, and it was me and McColl. So it was just weird. Like, that was the first time in 5 years that the whole room's been different. So for me, it was seeing where I fit in with the team. And I felt like I had somewhat of a leadership role in that room this year, kind of being the longest. I was there the longest out of everybody. So just kind of teaching guys the offense, making sure everybody knew what to do. And I know what my role is. Like, I knew, like, I know I'm not a number one or number two receiver, but I thought I could compete this year to make the team. So getting cut was kind of frustrating, because I felt like me being in there this year with just the group that we have, like, I felt like I could have took a leadership role and helped the guys out a lot.
To me, like, going to training camp, the thing that always stands out to me every year is watching the wide receiver position, because I feel like, I mean, I look at you and how tall are you? What are you, 6'3"?
6'3".
6'3", you can fly, you can catch. Every guy out there looks like a freak athlete to me. Like, every year at camp, there's some wide receiver that I've never heard of before who's flying all over the field making unbelievable plays, and I'm looking at it going, who is this guy? And how, like, the margin for the guy that makes the team and the guy that doesn't at the wide receiver position seems as narrow as any place in the world. Yeah. Is that how it feels to you as a guy that's been through that whole process?
Yeah, especially on, like, a fringe guy like myself. Like, it's like the first four guys are kind of penciled in, and after that it's like you got 10 guys competing for one or two spots. So you make one mental mistake, one physical mistake, it's like, oh man, I don't think I'm going to make it to the end of camp. So it's a grind. It's mentally, physically exhausting. But I would say the longer you do it, like, the more you kind of see, like, I want to say the politics, but you see the process of how things happen. And, yeah, like I said, like, you make one little mistake and you have a good feeling that you probably won't be there.
So you said you were going to go between Tyreek and Andy, or just Tyreek in the club?
I would say the club. Like,
so is it just about Andy specifically, though? Because we see him in the press conferences, and we always joke around. He talks, but he doesn't really say anything. A lot of coach speak. But then you hear players talk about how much they love him, how funny he is, and he does impressions. How different is he compared to the guy that we see up at the podium?
I would say he's a lot different. Like all the guys say, like, I think he's hilarious. Like, he's so quick and witty with, like, jokes and, like, one-liners. Like, he always keeps the guys on our toes, like, during meetings and stuff. He does a great job of keeping guys, like, loose, and like, when he needs to be serious, like, he has obviously got he's got the ability to be serious, but at the same time, he loves to keep things loose because he knows that's the best thing for the team. And yeah, I love Coach Reed. He's an awesome guy, and I've built a really good relationship with him over the past few years, so I'm excited to kind of see how things end up with him.
You think you ever want to coach?
I thought about coaching, but man, it's like you got to kind of pick, like, family or coaching. It's like, so
right.
I'm,
yeah,
I'm a family guy, so you know, the amount of, I don't think a lot of people realize how much time is spent on the coaching side. Those guys, especially Coach Reed, EB, those guys are at the building, man, 16, 17 hours a day, every day. And the, when the season hits, it might be 18, 19.
Yeah, if they 20. Leave. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know. To me, I'd rather kind of just have time with the family, and I would love to coach, but at the same time, the situation's got to be right, and I got to have balance in my life because I know the importance of family.
You're a smart man. Back into this on WHB. That's our man Gary Dieter, who's going to join us every week during the football season. Don't forget, Chicken and Pickle, North Kansas City, SEC Block Party this Saturday at 3 o'clock. You're going to be there representing Alabama, but you're there to meet all the SEC fans in Kansas City because, like we told Nate, it just means more.
SEC, Chicken and Pickle, Saturday, North Kansas City, 3 to 6. I'll be there. Show your school pride because there's going to be a lot of SEC teams there. Nate's going to show up with some KU.
Is he welcome? Will you let him come?
He can come. I'll give him my Alabama jerseys to wear or something.
You wear an Alabama jersey, and then you'll see how much it means. What are you giving me, Dirty
Lucas?
He's the one that said it means more.
I want him to tell some more Charlie Weiss Jr. stories.
Okay, then next week.
Let's do it.
You got to leave.
At the SEC party.
Oh, well, do that too. Yeah. See you there on Saturday. Everyone have a great day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.